Hello, I'm Dango Rose, and you're listening to the Mountaineer Podcast in conjunction with the Mountaineer Newspaper, the voice of the Peak to Peak, online and in print. Brought to you by Mountain Vale Media. Now, listen in for the show.
Jamie Lammers, and this week I have two musical guests. I'll let the first one introduce himself.
My name's Brett Kretzer. Grew up in Maryland and lived kind of in a couple states in the East Coast before moving out to Colorado. Been playing music pretty much my whole life.
And I hear you're performing at Eldora very soon.
Yeah, I'm playing on February 10th with a duo with Scott Slay.
So how did you get started in music in the first place?
Well, my first music experience was playing piano when I was 6 years old. My mom kind of made me play piano as an extracurricular, and I honestly hated it when I was six, and so I lasted like a year or something, and then I quit. And then when I was about 9 years old, I decided that I wanted to learn guitar, because, you know, I was into rock and roll and all that good stuff. So I started taking guitar lessons, and then, you know, after I had been taking lessons for a little while, my older brother started kind of just sitting in at the end of my lessons when they came to pick me up, and he kind of eavesdropped a little bit and see what it was all about, and he got interested, and he started playing guitar and became an awesome guitarist. And after he started playing guitar, I picked up drums so that we'd have more of a band. And then, yeah, I did that for a long time. The two of us started several bands in middle school and high school, and because we were into rock, and then we kind of slowly got more hardcore, like punk, and then screamo and hardcore, and then eventually we were just into full-on metal for a long time. And it wasn't until after I got home from college that I kind of fell into the bluegrass world and started playing mandolin after college when I was about 21, and yeah, never looked back. Been playing bluegrass ever since.
Who are some of your biggest influences in music?
That's a big question. The first band that I remember really feeling inspired by was Led Zeppelin. My dad had the Mothership record, Best of Led Zeppelin, in his truck, and we used to listen to that all the time. Every song had a guitar solo. So that picks out as my first big influence. And then the Beatles were a huge influence for me in my musical career. And then as far as bluegrass goes, Del McCurry and the Del McCurry Band is always a solid influence. I will always go back to them. I'll always go back to Hot Rise. And then I'm also influenced by a lot of old-time music. The predecessor to bluegrass, Appalachian mountain music, old-time is the genre name. And Tommy Jarrell is kind of the original, in my mind. I mean, he's not the original old-time fiddle player, but he's a really prominent one. But Tommy Jarrell is a big influence on me, and Bruce Molsky, and Watch House, the Punch Brothers. I mean, there's so many, man. It's hard to pin them down.
When did you first start playing shows live?
In middle school and high school, I was playing live just with our little band that we had there. We'd play at the Grange Hall in my hometown, and shows here and there, playing at church and stuff like that. But I guess after I got out of college, my brother and I started a little indie rock project for a little bit. We played live when I was about 21. I think that's the first time I started getting paid to play live. Let's put it that way, about 21. And then the bluegrass thing that started around that same time. And yeah, pretty much started touring in my early 20s.
What is your favorite part about being able to perform live and share music with an audience?
Oh, man, when you have a good crowd that is attentive and you receive additional energy from the crowd that you don't necessarily get when you're just playing with your buddies at home, and it really just kind of enhances the entire experience of playing music, and it allows people to kind of forget about life for a little bit and just be with you in that moment with the music. So I think that's really great and really fulfilling, and when it's an original song that you wrote, it's just that much more satisfying. It's just a great feeling.
Do you have a particular process when it comes to your songwriting?
Well, any songwriter will tell you, you kind of have to get through all the bad songs to get to the good ones. There's the songs that you kind of force a little bit, but when it's really good, a song just kind of comes naturally, and it doesn't even feel like you've necessarily written it. It just kind of feels like you've been a medium for this wellspring of creativity. And it's humbling, and yeah, I guess overall, it's just humbling, and it's really satisfying to know that you can bring something like that to the world and that other people can enjoy it.
Do you have a favorite part of the process of songwriting?
There's formula those you can follow for different genres, of course. But honestly, I haven't been doing a lot of songwriting for the past few years. I used to do a lot more, but again, the best songs seem to have no process at all. They just come, and they come out of thin air, it feels like. But I also really enjoy arranging, which is kind of a branch of songwriting, taking an old fiddle tune, say, that's public domain, that doesn't have any copyrights. You take old fiddle tune, and you can add different chords to it. You can change up the melody or the time signature or something like that. So that's kind of what I enjoy a lot these days, is really the arranging aspect of songwriting.
What do you hope that audience members take away from your show when they come and see you?
Just that feeling of living completely in the moment. I think that's what people get from going to concert, is living in that infinite oneness of the present moment. And I just would hope that they take away that feeling and remember that feeling and kind of take it into their daily life.
Are you playing with any other projects at the moment?
Oh man, well, since moving out to Colorado, I don't have a steady project. We're kind of all over the place. I'm playing with a lot of different people. But yeah, there's a couple shows at Eldora. They're great. I guess I'm trying to teach more, so if anybody out there wants lessons, I'm open. And I've been playing with this Old and In the Way tribute project. It's Old and In the Way tribute to Jerry Garcia's bluegrass band. But yeah, I guess that's the main stuff that's coming up.
Ooh, before we go, you teach?
Yeah, I teach both virtually and in person, mostly mandolin for bluegrass and old time. I can teach a little guitar. I teach up to intermediate, but mandolin is really what I enjoy. And specifically, I teach a lot by ear. So the process of picking up melodies on the fly by ear without having to be attached to a page or a book. And what that allows you to do is jump into a jam scenario. There's so many bluegrass jams around here, and people see the fun that's happening and they want to jump in. Maybe they play a little bit of banjo or something, but they feel really intimidated. So my process of teaching large bluegrass and old time repertoire by ear really allows you to jump into that fun and not feel intimidated. Throw my website in there if people are interested in lessons or anything. It's just brettkrester.com.
Thank you so much, Brett, for coming on board and joining us for the podcast. Now, for our second musical guest.
My name is Scott Slay, and I'm a bluegrass musician living in Denver, Colorado.
And I hear you'll be playing at Eldora with Mr. Kretzer.
Yeah, I'll be playing with Brett over there.
So how did your musical career start? How did it all begin?
Way, way back when I was a little kid. I think I was 4 or 5 years old, and my dad was already playing the banjo, and he took me to see the Newgrass Revival on their last tour that they did. They actually did a little private festival close to Pensacola, Florida, and Lillian, Alabama, the Flora, Alabama area. And John Callan, Bela Fleck, Pat Flynn, and of course Sam Bush at the show. And I told my dad I wanted a little guitar, and then I got a mandolin for Christmas, started practicing and playing. He showed me some things. And by the time I was 8, I just entered a bluegrass mandolin contest. I didn't win or anything, but I guess I did good enough that some of the guys in my dad's band were interested in me playing, so I started playing my dad's band, Highway 99. I did that pretty much my entire childhood. That's how I got started, but I've been playing in bluegrass bands and other rock bands in high school and jazz and college. And I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, gigging pretty much all of my high school and college years around there. And then I moved to Hampton Roads, Virginia, and started getting into singer-songwriter scene there. And that's where I met Sammy Sheila from the Lonesome River Band and got connected to the more professional bluegrass world.
Who are some artistic influences that have inspired you along the way?
I mean, definitely Sam Bush. I'm still a big fan of him now. Consider the king of Telluride. I've actually played Telluride 2 times now, and it's kind of a dream come true to be able to stand on the stage and look down at the tape and it says Sam Bush, and I know I'm standing there playing exactly where my hero is going to play that same night. And then I mentioned the Lonesome River Band because when I was growing up, that was my dad's favorite bluegrass band. And to be honest, it's my favorite traditional bluegrass band, and I was lucky enough to start a band with the banjo player and band leader of that group. It was called Big Virginia Sky. And I started a band with him when I was living in Hampton Roads, Virginia. Put out an album in 2015 and toured for about a year and a half. And then everybody, how all bands do, one moved away in different places and had to break up. And as you can tell, I don't live in Virginia anymore.
So what other groups have you played with over the years?
So when I was in Virginia, I would get a lot of gig offers for a band. But at the time, I had Big Virginia Sky, but they didn't all live in Hampton Roads. And everyone played with other groups, so we were not always available. And so I started a group called Scott Slay and the Rail, and I played around Hampton Roads, wrote some original music, bluegrass covers, and other groups' music covers. Then I moved to Washington, D.C., and I kept the band name, and I still had the same drummer because he was living in Richmond, Virginia, and that's kind of close to D.C., but I had totally other cast of members, different banjo players. I was playing guitar in that band, different mandolin player in the band, and even had a dobro player at one point, and a different bass player. I did that for about 3.5 years. At the very end of that stint, it turned into more of a quartet where I was playing back and forth, switching with Corey Chubb on mandolin guitar and lead singing. And then we had Mark Schatz, the legendary bass player. Bluegrassers out there know that that's a bass player for Nickel Creek for a long time, bass player for Tony Rice for a long time, and a lot of other famous bluegrass names. And I was also playing with the banjo player Mike Mumford. He's currently in the band Frank Sullivan, Dirty Bitch, and they travel all over and play. And that was kind of the last of that group from that area. I have gone back about 3 times since I've moved to Denver, and I've played some reunion shows with the old band, and it's still those same 4 people, including myself. But then when I moved to Colorado about 7 years ago, I kept the name. It was just easier. You know, I already had social media and all that stuff. I already had an album that I put out under Pinecastle Records called The Rail, the artist Scott Slay. So I just kept the name Scott Slay and The Rail, and I met some new friends, new musicians, and we played off and on throughout the years for the last 7 years. And then about a year and a half ago, I met this guy, Travis Stinson. He's from Nashville, but he's been living out here in Colorado for 15 years or more. Probably one of the best singers I've ever heard sing bluegrass music, or really just any kind of music, to be honest. Kind of has the Chris Stapleton vibe. But I met him, he joined the band, and over time was like, man, I want you to sing lead all the time. I've always rather be the arranger and songwriter and harmony singer, that kind of person. And so he started singing more, and I met a new banjo player, Nick Einturn. He's an amazing songwriter, and we've actually been writing all new music. We have a new band. It's called Slay, like my last name, but the band has metal rock vibes with the lyric and the riff to the song, but it's still bluegrass instruments, and then it's Travis singing all the leads. We've actually been in and out of the studio for the last 2 months, and we're still working on that. We plan on releasing some of that music here soon in 2024, and we're already lined up to play several different bluegrass festivals coming up. One I can actually announce, and there's several others that we have coming up, but I really can't say too much about them yet, because we haven't been given the go-ahead to release the info.
What's it like playing in groups compared to playing by yourself?
Yeah, well, the obvious thing is that music to me is a language, and it's not as fun to talk to yourself. I mean, sometimes maybe that's necessary, but at the same time, it's nice to have a conversation with other people. One reason why I do like to play pickup gigs with random people when possible, because it's like to be a new person. It's always nice, new person to talk to. And it's the same thing musically. It's nice to play with different people and meet new people and play music with them. But it's also nice to establish a relationship, which is why I'm in a band right now. And when you're playing by yourself, I feel like I really have to work on my craft, on my timing, my stage presence, because everyone is looking and listening just to me. And I have to play good music and execute it, but also put on a show for whoever's watching and listening, and it's just me. And that can be fun. It can also be nerve-wracking. But when you're playing with a group of musicians you trust, and you're playing music that you respect, I really like the songs that our banjo player's been writing. I really like how the musicians perform in our group. I forgot to mention, but we also have the famous skiing fiddler, Andy Reiner, plays fiddle in our group too. And it's just really nice to be able to sit back sometimes and blend in and try to have a conversation musically with these people that you have a relationship with, instead of just standing there and, I guess for lack of better words, being a fellow performer like you're a clown in a way. At least I do.
How does the songwriting process typically go for you?
As far as songwriting for me, it's me working by myself. It's weird. I write songs in spurts, and it will be 7 songs in 2 days, and then I'll have a whole year where I don't really feel like having inspiration to do it. I mean, I can write a song even when I'm not inspired, but I never liked that. For example, I was watching on PBS, I can't remember, back in like 2014 or 2013, something like that. I was watching the series on the Hatfields and McCoy, and some of the lines that were being said in the movie, they remind me a whole lot of the presidential elections that were going on while I was living in Washington, D.C., and I saw this direct parallel between, it seemed like, hate from Democrats to Republicans. I saw these direct parallels in the real story of the Hatfields and the McCoys, and I just had my guitar, and I was watching the show, humming and singing some lines, and I started coming up with a pattern, and so I wrote 4 patterns down, and I wrote some of the words, and I started doing some more reading and research about the Hatfields and McCoys, and of course, still paying attention to the election, and I married the two. That song. Another song I wrote when I was in high school, I was a huge Rage Against the Machine fan, and sometimes I had this habit of making parodies of songs. When you've heard a song a million times, for me, I'm just going to make up my own lyrics, and I was just doing that to be funny. With that song, the topic was related to, I took a friend down to New York for his birthday, and he was talking all kinds of smack about all these cool things he was going to do or whatever, and none of them happened, and so I ended up writing this song called Runaway Move that was inspired by this Rage Against the Machine song, but it's played by bluegrass instruments. instrument. And Rage, the dude raps and screams and yells. There's no melody. So obviously my melody and my rhythm are completely different. However, originally the lyrics that I was saying were ones that I was creating a parody while listening to a Rage song. But for me, the songwriting process is kind of sporadic for me. But then working with Nick, typically he will either have some kind of really old story or play that really inspires him, and we'll talk about it, and then I'll read it, and he'll already have, to be honest, most of the lyrics and the melody already ready. But the way that he writes his song is kind of like really slow. It almost sounds like a death march ballad, and he has a really low voice when he writes these songs. And then our lead singer has a super high voice. So as an arranger, really the role I'm playing in this group, I'll take the song and I may change some of the lyrics, add some new lyrics, take some away, maybe alter the melody a little bit, and I will maybe even the chord progression normally completely change the key with Travis's voice in mind. And I'll present that. Travis and Nick, we get together every Monday night and have a rehearsal to either work on new songs, writing new songs, or reviewing songs we're going to record in the studio. And so I'll present that to them, and we'll dissect it some more until we finally come up with what ends up being what we put on tape. And typically it goes from the original source, low voice, death march ballad, to really fast, high energy, rock by bluegrass song, kind of.
What do you love about being able to perform live?
It's always the process that leads up to the performance, and typically that starts months back, maybe even years, and you're always kind of anticipating it, because every single performance, even if you're playing the same songs you played somewhere else, they're all different based on the location, sound system, the people in the audience. And to be honest, when I learn about who's played there before, or have I been there before, is it a new place, because we're human, all those things affect them. We're not machines. I play these songs and it sounds just like this no matter what. And then also, even though in Slay, a lot of the stuff that we're doing is heavily arranged, there's still lots of room for improvisation. And so because of that, things are going to change night after night. Like sometimes I'll be in the middle of playing a solo, or I'll hear someone else playing a solo, and I'm listening to that musician, whoever it is in the band, but I'm also kind of looking and listening to the vibe, trying to build the vibe of the audience. And I might do something with my guitar that will kind of let some of the other musicians know, hey, let's change the accompaniment, and let's follow the melodic or rhythmic idea that our fiddle player or banjo player just played. Yeah, I listen to all the instruments all the time, even when I'm singing. I listen to every single detail, every single note of everyone. And so someone in the band might do something a little different I've never heard them do before on this particular part in a song, and that will kind of, that's interesting, I want to investigate that more. And so I'll do something either with my singing or my guitar to kind of let everyone know, hey, let's go with that. And all the musicians in the group, they're all very intuitive and they listen very well, and we can communicate that way as well. So how is the live show? I mean, it's an amazing experience of kind of like composing on the fly, and every single element leading up to and in the moment of that performance can affect what we're going to do or not do.
Is there anything that you hope the audience takes away from your shows when they come and see you?
I think it's hard to guess what that might be, because I'm not the audience member watching myself. I definitely can't be out there while I'm performing. You can't be in two places at once. But I think musicians take away that we really enjoy what we are doing, and everyone in the band is extremely focused in that. But also, I think the audience can tell that we are trying really hard to collaborate with the audience. And so the energy, the movement, the applause, the laughter, the singing, whatever the audience is doing, I think that they realize that they have an effect on the performance that we're giving right back to them. And so I think they leave knowing that they were part of an original thing. We wrote the song, but they affected what our performance was going to be and how we presented it or shared it with them that night or that day.
Is there anything else in general that you'd like to add?
Give us a follow. Check us out on Instagram. It's called Slay the Band. Most times you just type in S-L-A-Y, Slay the Band, first thing that comes up. And we'll be putting all of our announcements about exactly when the music is released. Right now the plan is sometime in late February, and then again in March, and again in April. However, we're still in process, so we're not really sure if we'll meet our own chosen deadline. And come say hello to me and Brett in Eldora.
Thank you so much to Scott for coming on board and making this a double podcast episode. If you want to see both Brett and Scott perform at Eldora, you can head there at 2861 Eldora Ski Road in Nederland as part of the Fireside in Timbers Lodge series on Saturday, February 10th, 2024 at 1 p.m. And now for this week's Music Mentions. Head to Busey Brews, located at 70 East 1st Street in Nederland, on Sunday, February 4th at 2 p.m. to see Mike Lamatola performing live. head to the Coal Creek Canyon Community Center, the CCCCC, on Friday, February 2nd, 2024 at 7 p.m. for an open mic night. It's located at 31528 Highway 72 in Coal Creek Canyon. Head to the Diner Bar Ned, located at 121 North Jefferson Street in Nederland, on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. for a karaoke night, and on Sundays at 6 p.m. for an open mic night. Head to Eldora Mountain Resort, located at 2861 Eldora Ski Road in Nederland, on Friday, February 2nd at 11 a.m. for the Friday Timbers Tap House series with Eric Richard Stone, on Friday, February 2nd at noon for the DJs in the Woodward Boombox series with DJ Drake, on Saturday, February 3rd at 9 a.m. for the DJs in the Woodward Boombox series with Blue Murrian, on Saturday, February 3rd at 1 p.m. to see Fireside and Timbers Lodge series with Colorado Junction Duo, on Sunday, February 4th at 9 a.m. for the DJs in the Woodward Boombox series with DJ Mason, and on Sunday, February 4th at 1 p.m. to see Fireside and Timbers Lodge series with Brittany Wagner. Head to Howlin' Wind Brewing, located at 51A Main Street in Rollinsville, on Saturday, February 3rd at 4 p.m. to see Tumbledown Shack Trio performing live. Head to the Jamestown Mercantile, located at 108 Main Street in Jamestown, on Friday, February 2nd at 7 p.m. to see the Pine Beetles performing live, and on Wednesday, February 7th at 5 p.m. for an open mic night. Also be sure to head there on Thursday, February 8th at 7 p.m. to see Foggy Mountain Spaceship performing live. Head to Knotted Root Brewing, located at 250 North Caribou Street in Nederland, on Friday, February 2nd at 5 p.m. for a Riverspell Duo performance, and on Saturday, February 3rd at 5 p.m. for a Deadfish Duo performance. Also be sure to head there every Sunday at 5 p.m. for Jazz Sundays. Head to the Caribou Room, located at 55 Indian Peaks Drive in Nederland, on Saturday, February 3rd for Chain Station and Woodbelly's performance. Doors open and dinner starts at 7 p.m. and the show starts at 8 p.m. And finally, head to the Very Nice Brewing Company, located at 20 East Lakeview Drive, number 112 in Nederland, on Saturday, February 3rd at 5 p.m. to see Small Kid Band performing live. Did we miss you or your performance? Want to submit your music listing in the Peak to Peak area? Do you have updates to your business or to your performances? Please call 303-810-5409 or email info@themountaineer.com to be included in the next print edition or the next podcast of The Mountain Ear.
That's it for our show. Subscribe online to get access to more news, weekly updates to our community calendar, and a link to our YouTube channel by visiting themountaineer.com. Be sure to use the coupon code PODCAST when subscribing for a 10% discount, only available to our listeners. I'm Dango Rose. Thank you for listening.